Hi, everyone, and welcome to a victory edition, a good victory edition of Scrambled Eggs here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here on your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Hey, Phil, we won a game.
On the road. Who saw that coming?
I dropped a wee on us. Marquette won a big road game. Very surprising, I guess, in a good way that Marquette went on the road and beat Georgetown. I think if you saw Twitter before the game, or even if you were just talking to your friends who are Marquette fans, everyone was really down on this team, expecting the worst, ready for the wheels to fall off and for the season to really spiral out of control. And even up to the point before Todd Mayo took that three-pointer, I was still kind of expecting that. But he hit the three, Marquette got a win, and we're going to talk about it in today's show. We're also going to maybe pump the brakes about getting too excited about that win, and also talk about the road ahead, because there are definitely some things we saw in that Georgetown game that I think people are wondering if that's going to shuffle the way Buzz does things going forward. But, Phil, let's just talk about the Georgetown win, which was a nice win. And you know, before we poo-poo it and talk about how much Georgetown's been struggling, I think certainly Marquette as a team deserves certainly a lot of credit for going on the road, going to D.C., and getting a W.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Considering where we were on Sunday, I mean, prior to the Georgetown game, I was drinking plenty of Gatorade, so I had my electrolytes up for the crying jag I was going to go on during this podcast, you know, because I didn't anticipate the win. But that's kind of funny how perception goes both ways. Prior to the season, this would have been a marquee matchup because both were expected to do well, and now both teams are struggling, and so it is a pretty big win. It's probably Marquette's best win of the season.
Yeah, it is. I mean, according to the RPI, maybe George Washington is a better win, but if you ask me, this was Marquette's best win. As much as Georgetown had been struggling, and even without Joshua Smith, Georgetown is a better team than GW. Sorry,
right.
They just are. And it was a road win, too.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, kind of building off your mantra all season of, you know, I'm not going to believe they're going to win the big games until they actually do. They had to come back in this game. I mean, they were down. They got hosed on a very questionable officiating call around the shot clock that I still don't understand. They could have folded up the tent and gone away. Luckily, Georgetown let us back in with a critical missed three free throw. But the team kind of battled back and won a game that they had every reason to lose. So, you know, maybe that's the big takeaway is maybe this team says, aha, we can win games if we just put our mind to it. I don't know.
And that's what we've talked about before, especially going back to that team 3 years ago that was kind of in a similar situation, maybe not as bad off as this team, but they didn't have a good win. They were in the Big East play, thick of Big East play, and they went on the road and beat Connecticut. And it was just like, finally, a good road win because Marquette had lost so many heartbreakers up to that point. And then the season kind of picked up from that point. They got a few more quality wins and were able to get into the tournament as an 11 seed and ended up going to the Sweet 16 that year. Will this team do that? Well, let's pump the brakes on that a little bit. But I think there is that same sense of relief. Just, oh, we won a game. We won a decent game against a team that's not DePaul or Samford.
Right. And kind of, especially in overtime, I would argue we won convincingly, or they won convincingly. There I go, throwing around the wheeze. Marquette won the game quite convincingly. So maybe that put some wind under their sails, got some players back that you know, we weren't anticipating, got some production out of some players we definitely weren't anticipating. Maybe it all starts to kind of gel, and it gets to be a real test this coming Saturday. It's not like we get to go and test drive the car one more time before we drive it in the Grand Prix, but maybe the timing's right for that.
Yeah, Marquette is definitely stepping up to another level against Villanova. We're going to talk about that a little later in the show. But obviously the biggest surprise, the most pleasant surprise from that game was 14 points from Steve Taylor, who, honestly, at times I forgot he was on the team. And I was thinking maybe he was just going to be hurt all year and wasn't going to play. But he was on the floor, looked healthy, moved well, and got Marquette some really big shots and really got the offense going.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you know, because we had talked about all season, oh, his knee's not feeling well, he's not coming back, he didn't play the last two games at all. So it really makes you wonder, was this a case of Buzz literally was desperate and put Steve in hoping to spark something because maybe he was just healthy enough. I don't believe that he was not healthy enough to go against Butler and then turned around and was extremely healthy against Georgetown. So either, you know, Buzz just kind of said, well, let's throw the kitchen sink and it paid off, or I guess I don't know what the or is.
Yeah, I guess that's a good question. That's, I guess, not something I really thought about, but it is something that you wonder about. If he was healthy enough to dominate like that, I don't say dominate, but healthy enough to play that well against Georgetown, why didn't he play all it against Butler? Because I just assumed he was still hurt against Butler. And maybe it was a situation where Buzz just said, oh, geez, here we go again, team struggling. Steve, go out there and see what you can do for me. And he did way more than probably even Buzz anticipated. Maybe that is what happened.
Right. Well, I mean, he played 23 minutes, which is not a ton. It felt like he was out there way more than that. But he was on double-double alert. He finished with 14 points and 8 rebounds. I don't think you come into a game when you haven't played meaningful minutes. Well, in the broadcast, they kept mentioning the Grambling game. That was the last time he played meaningful minutes. I mean, that was, what, I mean, 2 months ago?
Almost, yeah, almost.
You know, so I don't know. Call it an inspired coaching decision, whatever. It paid off. Now, we'll be curious to see if he can string more than one of those together. Yes. You know, I don't know if it was an aberration or if it was, hey, maybe the free Steve Taylor hashtag needs to come back out.
Yeah, I think it will if he is benched and doesn't play at all against Villanova. I think after a performance like that, you would think, well, let's throw him out there again and see if it happens again and see if he continues to play well. And as we've talked for weeks now about this Marquette offense and how much it's struggling, saying, you know, there's really no way out looking at this roster, no way for this offense to significantly improve unless some players who have not contributed at all significantly improve. And maybe Steve Taylor is that guy, or at least a piece of the puzzle, a guy who's going to just score significantly more than he has in the past 2 months. And if he can get you double figures every night from here on out, oh, that's great. Now, is that asking a lot? Is that being very optimistic? Maybe, because that's only one game. We're just talking about one game we've seen, so maybe not get too excited about it, but let's also not totally discount it and say he can't do it again.
Right. Well, and I think the thing that really the stat lines don't show it. Maybe I'm imagining things, but I think the other big takeaway from Steve Taylor was the ability of him and Devontae Gardner to run a high-low game. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that I think was because Georgetown was in a 2-3 zone, so that opened up some space at the free throw line. But Devontae hit a couple of jump shots. It was kind of reminiscent of the Syracuse game last year in the regular season. He had a couple of jumpers from the free throw line. Steve Taylor hit a couple from the free throw line, but they were able to feed each other in the post, and that's been one of our biggest weaknesses. Devontae Gardner has been our best offensive weapon, and we seem to be completely inept at getting him the ball in the post. So having Steve Taylor back, able to run the high-low with him, maybe that starts to generate some ability to feed Gardner. So Steve Taylor's productivity also brought Devontae Gardner up a level, which is something we desperately needed.
And also another thing it did was split up Otule and Gardner.
Yes.
And they didn't really, once Steve Taylor started playing well, I'm not sure how much, they maybe did a little bit, but Otule and Gardner didn't play much together the rest of the game. After that,
no, I don't remember it. I mean, I
maybe
wasn't
in overtime.
That close,
I think in overtime they played together a little bit, but they, for the most part, they were split up. And I think they're better that way. I think obviously Otule and Gardner are both better as fives,
yes,
especially defensively.
Yes,
you know, Gardner, he just can't defend the four. That's a huge weakness of his, and that's, you know, my biggest concern about him if we look in down the road of him possibly playing professionally. But that's another discussion for another day. But he really struggles to defend the four, especially if he's defending a stretch four. And when Steve Taylor out there, that Gardner can just go down low. He can just camp out down there, and Steve can defend the four. And granted, Steve is not an outstanding defensive player, but he's at least mobile enough to get out there and put the hand in the face of a shooter.
Right, and that was the thing. I mean, Steve still looked lost on defense a little bit from time to time, but he at least looked, you know, I remember seeing him in the Arizona game, and I thought his leg was going to fall off during the game. He at least looked athletic during that game, even if mentally he's maybe not all the way there. Physically, he's much more useful at the four, freeing up, like you said, Devontae to be a pure five. And really just bang and rebound and get points. And they feed off each other well. I think their games are very complementary.
Yeah, so hopefully we see more of them together. Hopefully we see that version of Steve Taylor again against Villanova and in the remaining games going forward, as Marquette now has a dozen games left in Big East play. The other guy that people are wondering if we're going to see more, obviously, is John Dawson.
Holy crow, where'd he come from?
31 minutes against Georgetown, scored 12 points. You know, and another, we keep going back to this discussion about the offense, Phil, and how much it struggled, and maybe you got to change things up. You know, of course, Buzz went with his usual starting lineup at the start of the game, at least in the backcourt, with Thomas and Wilson. But when they came out in the second half, John Dawson was starting the second half.
And as played, was Steve Taylor.
Yeah, and Dawson played the lion's share of the minutes. And as we've said before, Dawson, is he perfect? No. Yeah, he's going to turn the ball over a little bit more. He's not as good defensively as Derek is. But just that ability to shoot the ball, the confidence to shoot the ball, and just the willingness to take a three-point shot makes the defense have to account for him. And I think it is worth his deficiencies in other aspects of his game to have him out there. And I think Buzz bought into that idea against Georgetown.
Well, I'm gonna kind of do a compliment sandwich here, because to quote myself on Twitter last night, Dawson isn't the answer, but he isn't the answer, if that makes sense. I mean, I think he took some shots. He showed aggression, which is probably my biggest issue with Derek Wilson to date. Is just he's got a physical talents, he just won't use them. Whereas John Dawson was kind of like, you know what? Hey, listen, I haven't been getting a lot of minutes. I'm going to take every advantage. I'm going to be aggressive. If I got an open three, I'm going to take it, which he hit a couple. I'm going to force the issue. So that was fantastic. Now the reality check I would give it, and I'd be curious as to your opinion on this, is I kind of feel like some of his success was as a result of the 2-3 that Georgetown was playing. And what that did is that it allowed his strength, his shooting, his aggressiveness to be a little more pronounced, and his weaknesses, his turnovers, to be kind of hidden. You know, if he was playing against a straight-up man defense, I don't know that he would have been as successful. I don't know. I don't know what your
maybe
thoughts
so,
are.
Maybe so, because I'm sure Georgetown didn't even have a page in the scouting report on John Dawson. They probably didn't even know what to expect out of him, and they probably didn't expect to see him in the game. They probably didn't expect him to shoot. They definitely had the book out on Derek Wilson. They were giving him all kinds of space, and like every team in Big East play is. I mean, like the announcers were saying all game, you know, every time Derek Wilson got the ball, don't have to worry about him shooting. He's not going to shoot it from out there, and it's the truth. I mean, the secret's out. And so, yeah, Georgetown defended accordingly, and they backed off the point guard, and they probably left John Dawson alone a lot more, and I'm sure Villanova is going to watch the tape and say, well, if Dawson's in there, he's probably going to shoot. So they would probably – I think, yeah, that's probably a good point. Villanova will probably defend him much differently and respect his ability to shoot the ball, but – that's not necessarily a bad thing if Dawson can get the ball out there with a man in his face and get the ball into Gardner.
Agree. Well, and the two other kind of compliments I will pay to Dawson, and I think they were little noted. I think maybe paint touches caught on to this as well, but Dawson played almost 13 minutes with four fouls without fouling out of the game. And the other compliment was, I would definitely, at this point, it's a very small sample size, but I definitely would put Dawson in at the end of a game where there might be a fouling situation, because he hit two clutch free throws, and Derek Wilson has shown no propensity to hit anything clutch.
Right. I mean, he's just not a shooter. He's hesitant to do it, and he just doesn't. And yeah, I agree. Like, Dawson did hit some big free throws, and he hit some big outside shots. He's just a much better shooter. So, and the fact that Buzz played him that long with four fouls, that to me tells me Buzz is having a shift in his thinking about the point guard position. Now,
do you think Dawson starts?
I don't know. I think maybe. I think he'll see a lion's share of the minutes again. I think we may see the pseudo start, or as I like to call it, the Eric Williams start for Derek Wilson, maybe.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking is that
he'll start, play a few minutes, and then we'll hardly see him again. I would lean that way. I think he might go that way, maybe just to keep Dawson humble a little bit, but also recognize, okay, I got to play this guy if I got to win. But, I mean, to me, that really doesn't make sense when I say it out loud like that. If Dawson's the guy, play him. Start him.
Yeah, I agree. If Dawson's the guy, you got to play him. I think the cautionary tale, I think there's a lot of Marquette fans going, whoa, Dawson's the man. He is the answer. And that's why I say, you know, he's not the answer. He's going to have games where he absolutely struggles and people are going to flip on him and be like, oh, what are we doing? He's a freshman.
I remember because, you know, during the Butler game, you know, I saw several comments on Twitter. That's why Dawson doesn't play. Turnover, bad pass, lost on defense. You guys wonder why Dawson doesn't play? That's why he doesn't play right there. So they're all kind of snide comments about Dawson during the Butler game because he didn't play particularly well in his limited minutes in that game. But turn it around, everyone's back on the bandwagon. They love him again because he, you know, he played so well and hit outside shots. But yeah, I agree. He's part of the solution, not part of the problem. And yeah, he has his deficiencies. He will make mistakes. He will turn the ball over a little more than Derek will. But what you're balancing is you got one guy who is basically hardly noticeable on both ends because he doesn't make mistakes. Yeah, he's not going to make any many mistakes defensively, and he's really not going to take any risks offensively. And he's not going to turn the ball over, but he's also not going to score. Or you got the guy who's maybe a little bit more extremes in both regards. Dawson, who's going to score more, turn the ball over a little more, maybe lose you some points on defensively because he's not as strong there. But like I said earlier, I think it's worth it for what he's going to bring with that outside shot because now teams have to respect it. And if, when you have a point guard who can score just a little bit, it really changes a lot of things, and we saw that against Georgetown.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to kind of make it the financial analogy, you know, Derek Wilson becomes the hedging of the downside risk with Dawson. You know, Dawson's got a high ceiling, much higher ceiling than Derek Wilson is, at least to date. But he's got a much lower floor than Derek Wilson is. So, Buzz, I think what he's going to do is he's going to manage these two if he can. He's going to manage when John Dawson is hot and his high side is really coming out. All right, John Dawson, here's the ball. Go do your thing. When maybe Dawson's off or the matchup isn't effective, you're going to see more Derek Wilson because while Derek Wilson maybe won't give you the high side, he will probably minimize the dumpster fire that John Dawson might put out there just from being a freshman and inexperienced and turnover prone. I mean, I'm not picking on Dawson. I think he's got talent. I'm just saying that, you know, you got to put him in a situation where he can be successful.
Yeah, who also turned the ball over a lot but had talent was Junior Cadogan.
Yeah.
And I think most Marquette fans would probably rather have Cadogan out there than Derek Wilson. As much as we all griped about Junior Cadogan and his sometimes epic turnover games, he also had his games when he won Marquette the game because of his ability to score, ability to penetrate and create for other guys. So, I mean, you just have to take the good with the bad sometimes. You got to realize that there are no perfect players on this team, and you just have to weigh the positives and the negatives for everybody. And at least based on the Georgetown game, the positives of Dawson outweigh the negatives of Dawson.
Right. Yep, I agree. And it's going to be, like I said, I think it's going to be case by case. And this is, once again, why Buzz gets paid the multi-million dollar bucks and we're sitting at home talking about it, is he's going to have to make the evaluation of when the players are in the right position and when the matchups are you know, best aligned for Marquette. But I do think that we've seen... it's hard to say this after one game, but I really doubt that we'll see Derek Wilson play 30 minutes a game again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I, unless Dawson just totally goes the other way in the next few games and just starts really struggling out there and getting lost, which could happen. Like you said, he's a freshman, so that could happen. But if we see more games like Georgetown from Dawson, yes, I think Derek Wilson's minutes drop significantly. And another guy I think who at least deserves a little bit of props from the game, mainly because he gets picked on so much, Jake Thomas actually played a pretty good game.
Yeah, he was a shooter.
Four threes, you know, he had his misses, but they were only two, 4 of 6. You know what I've noticed about Jake, by the way? When he's taking a three, it is either swish or it is just horribly off.
Like, yeah, well, that is a good observation. The one I really remember was the fast break three where he got the ball on the wing and immediately went into a shot, overshot the rim. I think he hit backboard on the opposite side.
Yes, and like that's the thing. Like with Jake, when like it's either right in a beautiful three or it is oh my gosh kind of shot. But anyway, Jake had more swishes than oh my gosh shots against Georgetown, especially there late in the game. He hit in the second half. He hit a couple big shots that really helped out. 12 points for Jake. I still think Todd Mayo should probably play a little more at the two than he should. But you know, of course, Todd Mayo hit a big shot as well. But still, Jake had a good game, so I think he at least deserves some props. Like I said, because we do pick on him and Twitter picks on him so much, Jake played well.
Yeah, and I guess it is what it is, and I have to settle in. I am still amazed. Jake had 35 minutes in that game. Yeah. I'm just amazed that somebody else hasn't, and I'm not putting this on Jake. This is on the other players like Mayo, how they haven't stepped up enough to take minutes away from Jake.
Yeah, Juan Anderson, for example, 4 minutes. Not that he's a two, but I mean, if he would play more at the three, I mean, there wouldn't be as many three guard sets out there. Like Mayo would play more at the two,
right? But Mayo only had 15 minutes,
right? And you know, he had a big shot too. Yeah. Obviously, he had the big one that tied the game at the end of regulation. But yeah, I agree. It is on the guys to do whatever it is Buzz needs them to do more of to get minutes, and obviously they haven't at this point. And Jake continues to do so and continue to earn his minutes. Now, Juwan Johnson's another story now that he's hurt. You know, if he ever gets to 100% again, we'll see. And it'd be great if he does and could earn some more minutes, similar to the way Dawson has, and take advantage of an opportunity to get out there. But I think we might be waiting on Trey J for a while.
Have we heard, other than Twitter rumors, have we heard anything about the injury, the extent of it?
I haven't heard anything definitive, no. I'm just basing it off the assumption that, you know, Johnson hardly plays when he's healthy. And now that he's hobbled and was on crutches last week, I'm not anticipating seeing too much of him going forward. Just a wild guess by me.
No, I agree. I just didn't know if we saw anything more that gave us an idea when he came back. Well, and the other one from a minutes perspective and just from an overall game quality, we really need to talk about is everyone the fan favorite freshman, the Bane, Deonte Burton. I know some don't like the Bane nickname. I've grown quite partial to it, but
it's grown on me much like the automatic chant did last year.
Yes,
where at first I'm like, "Come on, stop it!" But then it just grows on you, kind of like that Seinfeld episode when you know George just wore a woman down and eventually was like, "Costanza." Just grew on him, just like a jingle.
Your episode related Seinfeld quote, please go to Joe McCann 3. even the automatic chant, even Devontae's mom was chanting it last night.
Yeah, that was funny. Now that was hilarious.
That was great. I in those quick seconds, Devontae Gardner's mom may have replaced Junior Cadugan's mom as my favorite mom.
David Kamichik said the same thing. He said, Mrs. Gardner is my favorite Marquette mom ever. That was classic. But anyway, getting off topic. But yes, your point about Bane.
Yes, my point is Deonte Burton, only 6 minutes. The last two games, at least from the eye test, and the stats seem to back it up a little bit, he's kind of hit a bit of a wall. The question is, is it a small wall that he can kind of jump over, or is it a full-fledged roadrunner or coyote running into the wall that the roadrunner put in place?
Yeah, normally it's the coyote that put it in place and just ruins it for himself. The roadrunner just
would
kept
you
it
stop
away.
Correcting
we're getting
my
off
horrible
topic
analogies.
I'm sorry, I know
this is not a grammar rodeo.
No, and I'm just correcting you on your Looney Tunes references. But I get your point. I think it's a good question. Is this a mini slump from Burton? Just a couple games. That's what I hope it is, but. As has been well documented, he struggles defensively, but he's just so explosive offensively, and everyone can see it every time he takes the floor. He's confident when he goes to the lane, maybe too confident sometimes when he goes in amongst the trees and kind of loses it and turns the ball over, and we saw that a little bit over the last couple games. I'm not going to read too much into any kind of Bane slump yet, but it is possible that he's hit a freshman wall, because that does happen.
Well, and I also think that there's more tape on him. The book's out a little bit. He's been scouted. And I think, I want him to be aggressive. That's his thing. He's been aggressive on offense. I'm not asking him to necessarily change, but then I'm going to turn around and say, I do think he needs to, there's a couple of times where he ends up being a black hole and the ball just stops with him.
That is a problem.
And he's got to recognize those positions where he can force it and get the score, and those positions where it's really better off if he kind of dishes. And that's where the Steve Taylor Gardner combination was so successful, is they were both operating down low, where I think Burton can do his best work this season. But Burton doesn't recognize when he should dish and when he should score, whereas I think Steve Taylor has a little bit more savvy in that regard. He's also got a little more height, but he's got a little more savvy to be able to distribute more than just looking to score every single time.
And I think that's a good point you bring up about Burton, is, you know, we all get excited and Twitter really explodes when every time he dunks on someone or has a great take and goes to the basket and just makes an NBA quality move. But what no one really ever says is, that's a great pass by Burton, or a great look, you know, getting it in the paint and then dumping it off to Gardner or someone. He really doesn't do that, and he doesn't kick it out to the shooters. Not that Marquette has shooters, but if they did, he doesn't do that very much. So, yeah, maybe that is something he needs to continue to work on. Maybe that's a reason why he doesn't play as much as well.
Right.
Is because if he's not making shots and he's just going to the basket and either missing shots or turning it over, there's really not much of a reason to have him out there, as much as we all love it when he posterizes somebody.
Right. Well, I
can't really play for highlights. You got to play to win. So.
Right. Well, I think the other teams probably all saw the dunk on the poor fellow from Samford, who was never the same, and they may be paying him a little more attention than not.
Yeah. Yeah, people know about him, but I'm just going to say it was just a little slump, and maybe a product of, one, Steve Taylor playing better, and the great two-man game with Gardner. And if you like Wilson out there as well, then, you know, maybe a situation Buzz say, well, where am I supposed to put Burton
right.
in that situation?
Well, because Wilson did play, what I would argue, with the exception of a dunk and a couple other plays, a relatively quiet 44 minutes.
Yeah, quiet 10 points, because most of it was from the free throw line. Yeah, he was pretty quiet, but I wouldn't say he necessarily played a bad game. Obviously, Jamil's the guy that we always look to score 20 points just because he's so athletic and explosive, and we know he has that in him. But, yeah, not a bad game, but just, like you said, a quiet game.
But he is becoming the one complaint I really have about Jamil Wilson, other than the obvious, I wish he was just more consistent. The one complaint I have about him is he almost single-handedly takes the worst three-point shots out of any offensive set. And it's not like he's a very good shooter with the three-point basket. He just seems to take some really weird shots. He was 0-for-4 again last night. Anytime he jacks up a three, it kind of drives me nuts.
Yeah, he had one, I believe, just right at the end of regulation. It was the possession before Mayo hit the free throw, wasn't it?
Yes,
where,
yeah.
Like, but they had a timeout, and right out of the timeout, like, Jamil threw up a brick, and everyone on Twitter at the same time said that's what they drew up.
Right. Yep. That's right. That was kind of the one I was thinking of. And there was plenty of time left on the clock. And
yeah. And it was just a shot that, you know, everyone was looking at. And like when the never ending question among Marquette fans is with this team anyway, is when this team is shooting up a lot of threes and missing all of them, is it because that's what Buzz is drawing up, or are the players just not listening and Buzz is just losing his mind over all these three-pointers being taken? And that was a perfect example of that, is when Jamil took that three, I wondered, like, is that what Buzz drew up, or did Jamil just, you know, take matters into his own hands and Buzz is just over there steaming over it?
Right, I don't know. Well, and it just goes to show you know, that there's probably some credence to the Buzz doesn't trust freshmen, because I guarantee you a shot like that, granted maybe not at the time of the game they were at, but a shot like that from Juwan Johnson or Deontay Burton would have gotten them on the bench, right at the end of the bench, not even next to Buzz, at the end of the bench. Whereas
that's
Jamil,
next to Dylan Flood.
You're right. Yeah. Where Jamil Wilson gets to play through it. So, again, I'm not going to sideseat drive that, or, you know, backseat drive that, but it seems a bit inconsistent, and I agree with you. I would love to be in the huddle to see what they're drawing up and what actually gets executed, because that is probably the biggest unknown with Marquette there is.
How great would it, like, a full game be with, like, Buzz mic'd up and cameras on the bench?
Would you bid on, like, let's say they were doing a fundraiser for Marquette, maybe even make it a meaningless, like, non-conference game? How much would you pay for the opportunity to sit on the bench in the huddle you know, at the halftime and just listen to everything that's going on.
Oh, I would be all for that. That'd be fascinating to me.
It absolutely would. I would consider some form of secondary mortgage on my home to be able to afford that.
Oh, I would, as a television producer, I would love to shoot something like that and mic him up and have cameras in the huddle and just do a documentary like it. I think it would be fascinating. I think it'd be terrific.
You know, but that would be the. Have you ever seen the 24/7 the hockey ones right before the Winter Classic or whatever they do on HBO?
Actually, no.
Oh, they do something similar like that where it's 24 hours of everybody's mic'd up, they're following everyone, they're interviewing everyone. It's amazing. If they did something like that with Marquette, I mean, Buzz would be one of the greats at that sort of thing. It would just be cool. But needless to say, this is a very complicated way of saying we'd really like to be in on the huddle and find out what's going on.
Yes, we really got off topic there. But I'd be all for shooting a documentary with Marquette basketball, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, I would love to know what's being drawn up and how the players are executing it and what Buzz says exactly when they do not execute and jack up bad shots. But that was an issue with Jamil, which is going back to your original point, which I think you made like 20 minutes ago.
Right.
But going forward, though, with this team, after a nice win, but let's be honest, that was not Arizona that they beat.
Right. And it's not like we've got a protected seed.
Right. It is so far from that. Marquette is still on the bubble. The NIT bubble, really, if you look at their overall profile. They still have so much work to do. Because if you saw that hilarious exchange between Anonymous Eagles, Ruby Q, and Casual Hoya before the game, you knew Georgetown fans were as disenchanted with their team as Marquette was heading into that one. And I have a coworker who is a big Georgetown fan, and he pointed out to me that Georgetown's probably looking at 6 straight losses now. Because they came into that game with 2. Losing to Xavier and Providence, and then after that, Georgetown has Creighton, Nova, and Michigan State are their next 3 games. So Georgetown's in all kinds of trouble. And Georgetown struggled, and that was not a great team. It was a good win, but that was not a great team that Marquette beat. The next game is a good team, a great team perhaps, and it's going to be at home, which is important for Marquette. But so many things need to happen in this game, Phil, for Marquette to beat a very good Villanova team who was absolutely ambushed by Creighton.
Yeah, well, property, we got crushed by Creighton. Creighton then crushed Villanova, so we should be a 2-point favorite, right?
Ken Pom would probably disagree.
Well, what does he know? He only runs a website that's hyper-accurate.
Right. But, Creighton's 3-point shooting against Villanova was just a total anomaly. It was unbelievable. And that's something like that with Creighton is why I think they could go to the Final Four, but if those threes don't fall, Creighton could lose to a double digit.
They're like a more athletic, like super Wisconsin team.
Mm-hmm. And more likable.
Much more likable.
Much more likable. And, you know, they're a Jesuit Wisconsin.
Right. They're a classy Wisconsin, if you can put those words together.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy for Creighton. But going back to the issue at hand of Villanova.
We really need to take our ADD meds before this.
I know. And, like, this podcast is going to be, like, an hour long, and we're going to have, like, 20 minutes of actual Marquette basketball talk. But
isn't there a Seinfeld episode about this we could talk about?
I'm sure I can make some kind of relation to that, yes. Like,
anyway, to Villanova.
Don't even get me started.
Yeah, I know.
But what is Marquette going to have to do to beat Villanova?
Make a lot of baskets. I mean, it's going to be – they're going to have to play the perfect game.
It is.
Villanova's got length. They've got 3-point shooting, which is always Marquette's Achilles heel. I think that's really based on the fact that the way Marquette plays defense, you know, and I think we've talked about it in previous podcasts. Just like on offense, they need paint touches. On defense, they need paint touches, and they work from the inside out, which is going to leave the shooters open longer. So I don't know if Buzz makes an adjustment or not. It's going to have to be the perfect game. I really do think if John Dawson is going to be the man for the rest of the season, this is the game he's going to have to prove he can at least be average or competent during the game. That's going to make the difference in the game.
You know, all the things Marquette fans have been waiting on to happen this year basically have to happen against Villanova. We have to hope that this is the game where Jamil Wilson takes over and that he's focused and that he is playing and not coaching, as Todd Mayo suggested a few weeks ago. This is the game when Todd Mayo has to step up and hit shots off the bench, and just shoot for a high percentage, really, not turn the ball over, get quality minutes. It's a game when Jake Thomas has to shoot well. It's a game, like you said, Dawson has to play well. It's a game when Gardner has to get to the free throw line. All those things have to happen, in my opinion, to beat Villanova, just because this team is so superior to Marquette. Marquette's probably coming in a little confident, maybe, but Buzz is certainly going to spend this week trying to figure out, all right, am I going to go forward with a Dawson-Steve Taylor lineup because it works so well against Georgetown, or was that just a one-game thing, and should I stick with what I'm more comfortable with, and that is Derek Wilson and Otule and Gardner together? Hopefully not. I certainly at least want to, and I think you would hope he's at least going to try a lot of minutes with Dawson and Taylor, and if it fails him, I don't think anyone would necessarily blame him for trying.
No, I think you got to go. You got to go down swinging. I agree. I do think you're right that we're going to get the Eric Williams honorable starter minutes from Derek Wilson, but I think he'll have a relatively quick hook.
Yeah, and you know, if Marquette needs defensive stops late in the game, maybe we see Derek then, because you know, he's still the superior defender. But at the same time, as you alluded to earlier, if it's a situation where, say, Marquette is ahead, and that would be awesome, but Villanova is needing a foul, then probably he would not be out there.
Right. Well, and the thing I worry most about this game is, and Villanova is very capable of it, and Marquette is also very capable of being susceptible to this, is the avalanche of points in the first 5-10 minutes. I think the crowd at the Bradley Center will be interesting. It's been a little over a week since Marquette's had a home game. Well, actually, it'll be 2 weeks by the time that that game rolls around. So I think the crowd will be excited to be back in the Bradley Center, having Villanova in a top 25 team. It's kind of the most exciting, most important game of Marquette's season, probably all season, but certainly to date. The crowd's going to be amped and pumped. I'm just afraid of what a crematorium the stadium's going to turn into if Villanova comes out with, you know, some sort of avalanche of points, and right, you know, and Marquette's just going to be sitting there looking to claw their way back in. It's really going to have to be, Marquette needs to turn it into a dogfight early and then just hope they can wear out Villanova late. I it's not going to be a case where Marquette's going to come in, even if they're shooting hot. I just don't think Marquette has the points to keep up with Villanova without the defense stepping up and Marquette's offense being very effective.
Yeah, and I guess this will be the first home game since the students came back from holiday break, or at least all of them, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, the last one was, I think, the
Seton Hall on the 11th.
Yep, the students will. This will be the first game back, so it should be a full student section. There's not anything big coming up. There's no midterms or anything.
Right, and the home court advantage is really only as good as the team itself, because no rowdy fans are going to, you know, get up and cheer loudly if the team is just getting roped. I remember, Phil, it was our freshman year when Marquette was playing Cincinnati and Kenyon Martin came to town. And at the time, I don't know if the students still do this, but they still have like the confetti in their hands that they throw
up.
Yes,
they do.
Okay. Because I remember that game. I remember the confetti was getting a little moist in my hands because we were holding it for so long.
I do remember that. I had to bend my knees to keep from passing out because it was forever. I think it was like 7-8 minutes went by before we scored an actual bucket.
Right, and that is the way you silence a crowd, is just to take the wind out of the place. And hopefully they do not do that, because, you know, the crowd will be rowdy when the ball is tipped. The question is that the first 30 seconds after that, the next minute after that, will Marquette be scoring buckets? Will they be getting stops? Or will it be brick, Villanova basket, brick, Villanova basket, brick, Villanova 3, and then all of a sudden the air is totally out of the place?
Yeah,
and that would be my biggest concern, because then everyone would be like, oh no, we suck again.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, this fan base is a little bit schizophrenic right now. We don't know which direction to go. Oh, we're good, we suck. Oh, we really suck. Oh, maybe we're not so bad. Oh man, we suck. You know, so,
and as Ruby Q pointed out this morning, KenPom has no idea what to think of Marquette. They drop 40 points one week, they rise 30 points today. So, who knows what to make of this team?
Well, at least we can claim we broke KenPom.
Yeah, yeah, we he has no idea what to make of his team.
And in breaking news, KenPom has quit because he just doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, he just has an empty spot in his formula for Marquette. He can figure out most everyone else. He just can't figure out Marquette. And quite frankly, none of us can. That's why we have this podcast, is to just talk it out.
Right. Well, and the other thing I want to point out, I mean, the reason the Villanova game is so critical, that it is a must-win, if you look at the way the schedule breaks down beyond the Villanova game, you know, before the last episode, we were talking about, man, we had to go 12-3 or whatever it was. We had to go on a significant tear. And when we lost to Butler, we kind of, especially the way we lost to Butler, giving up a late lead late, or that's office of redundancy office, but you know what I mean. We lost the lead late. It was like, oh man, that could have been ours. That could have been the run. If we somehow managed to beat Villanova, you've got Providence at home at St. John's, which looks much less difficult than it did previously.
By the way, Providence looks a little more difficult.
Providence does look a little bit more difficult, but again, Providence at home, I have a little more faith in at that point in the schedule.
I do too, yes.
Then you've got at St. John's, which looks less tough. Then you've got Butler at home. You've got to hope that they can put something together. Then you've got at Seton Hall. Again, if Marquette plays the entire game like they did the first half of the original Seton Hall game, we've got a shot.
Seton Hall currently, for what it's worth, the only team in the Big East as we are recording this podcast with an RPI worse than 100.
Right. So, I mean, the schedule breaks down such that, and then mid-February, Xavier at home before we have to go up against Creighton again. But, I mean, it is legitimately possible. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's possible that if Marquette can beat Villanova, they could go on something like a 7-0 run or a 6-1 run or something like that, that could at least make it, you know, I mean, I guess we're wishing for small things at this point, but we certainly might be looking at Joe Lunardi putting us in the last four out or the first four in or whatever.
I agree. I will be willing to reopen the Marquette as an at-large team discussion if Marquette beats Villanova. I am still have that door closed at the moment because I still think it is so far-fetched for Marquette to win that many games over the next 12, because I think they can only really afford to lose one or two games the rest of the way in order to pull that off.
Right.
But I just think that's asking a lot.
Well, and let's be honest, the Georgetown win was a good win for Marquette. It was a good win for their confidence. Georgetown is a decent team, but when it comes down to the stats, RPI and all that stuff, especially when you talked about Georgetown's schedule, you know, 6.5 hours ago when we started this podcast, They're looking to be in some serious trouble. They're not going to help our RPI anyone. No one's going to look at our schedule at the end of the season and say, oh, they beat Georgetown on the road. That's nice.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, we've got to get some other significant wins. The biggest one out there, I mean, obviously at Villanova is going to be the biggest possible win. But I'm giving us a slim to none chance on that one, and slim just left town.
Right. As the Big East is starting to take shape, now we can look at the schedule going forward and say with pretty good confidence that the season will be decided in a six-game stretch there, where Marquette has Xavier Creighton at home, then at DePaul, which is the House of Horrors,
right,
then the rematch with Georgetown, then at Nova, and I guess you could throw at Providence in there the first week of March as well. That looks like a really critical six-game stretch where Marquette could either make up a lot of ground or totally disappear. And, you know, none of it really matters if Marquette, you know, plays 500 ball over the next couple games, so maybe we're getting way ahead of ourselves. But that is, to your point, that is why the Villanova game is so important. Win the Villanova game, then belief and hope starts to return that this team could possibly, maybe, slightly be in the discussion of possibly thinking of maybe being an NCAA team.
Right.
Still a ways off. But there is at least hope after that Georgetown game, because we saw at least an avenue to improvement. In the past, we have not seen that avenue. We're just like, all right, look, this is the roster we're stuck with. I don't see any scores on this team. I don't see anybody stepping up and playing. But all of a sudden, Steve Taylor gives us a great performance. John Dawson shows some promise. And you think, okay, well, if we can get this every night, and maybe Jameel Wilson has a good game here and there, and you know, maybe Todd Mayo has a good game here and there, maybe Marquette can get a bunch of wins down the stretch. Is it asking a lot? Maybe it is. But there's at least a little glimmer of hope with this team after that Georgetown win. And we will learn, I think, a lot about this team and where it stands with the cream of the crop in the Big East on Saturday against Villanova.
Right. And I think the last point is, just to put everything in perspective, I mean, if Todd Mayo doesn't hit, admittedly, a clean open look for three to tie that game and go into overtime, if he misses that shot and Marquette loses at that point, you know, in regulation based on everything we saw previous to that, Marquette fans have totally, I mean, there was nothing necessarily overly exciting in the 40 minutes of regulation. There were perhaps glimmers, but the fact that we got the win and we dominated in overtime, I think, has a tendency to gloss over some things. So let's just see what the next couple of games hold before we're really anywhere close to saying, yeah, we got a shot here.
Yeah, I agree. If Mayo misses that shot, we would be on this podcast saying, well, it was nice that Steve Taylor played better, but they still lost, and I see three more losses coming ahead with Villanova and a better Providence team and a trap game against St. John's. But now all of a sudden the attitude changes a little bit. They get the win, so now we're talking, hey, maybe we beat Villanova and we can get Providence at home and St. John's isn't playing well. So, like, it totally changes my perspective on the next three games based on the mental mindset of the team of Marquette and the possibilities of better, of more good performances from the likes of Dawson and Taylor, and maybe you get a great game from Jamil Wilson somewhere in there. I'm intrigued by the team now, at least, whereas I think everyone was totally off the bandwagon after the Butler loss, and I think that was just a kind of a crushing loss that kind of made a lot of fans think, all right, it's over. You know, it's
right.
Well, I think CBI bound, maybe NIT bound, but the Georgetown win, at least now we see, like I said, that avenue towards improvement. We see a way that this team can actually get better, and it's Steve Taylor and John Dawson right now.
Right. Well, and I think it just goes to show you that change, sometimes for the sake of change, I don't always advocate it, but sometimes just doing something different, even if it doesn't necessarily produce different results, it just, the appearance of change makes things feel or look better. And I think we saw some clear results with Dawson and Taylor, but change for the sake of change is also a good thing in this case. It just kind of changes everyone's perspective and viewpoint.
Yeah, it's kind of hitting the reset button a little bit. So, you know, we're not gonna necessarily see the same thing every night. We're going to see something a little bit different, and maybe it's a change from what we've seen in the past, a better offense, and a few wins here and there. And I guess we'll just, as cliche as it sounds, take it one game at a time, try to win as many as we possibly can, and Marquette will just see where the chips stand in March and see how it all lines up.
I agree.
And, you know, I just thought of a Seinfeld episode that could, like, parallel us getting off track. It's the episode when they were writing the first episode of the pilot, and by the end of the episode, all they had was the first line because they kept getting off track.
Well, so see, there you go. If you need to reminisce,
Seinfeld
on
can be applied to everything, including Marquette.
Hey,
basketball.
This is both your Marquette and need to reminisce about a 15-year-old television show podcast.
And it's still that good.
Do we have time to get into a Friends discussion?
Absolutely not. But we do have time to get a prediction on the Villanova game before we get out of here.
Not feeling good. I'm going to say I do think they'll make a game of it, but Nova just has too many horses. I think we lose ugly late. Let me rephrase. I think we're going to lose. The score is going to look ugly compared to what it was. I think we end up losing 10 or 12 at the end of the game, but we'll keep it within 4 or 5 during.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a closer game than I would have predicted had Marquette lost that Georgetown game. Because I think we are going to see Buzz continue to just try to get something out of Steve Taylor and Dawson. I just think Villanova is just such a superior team. It's going to fall a little bit short, but I still think there's hope for this team, at least improving to the point where that maybe we can, when we get to March, we can talk about winning three games in 3 days at the Garden and maybe sneaking into the tournament that way. But that's down the road. I think Marquette loses to Villanova just because they're that much better, but hopefully we'll have something really good to talk about on next week's podcast as we look ahead to Providence and St. John's. I want to thank everybody listening to Scrambled Eggs. As always, you can find us on iTunes. You can hit us up on Twitter, either at the Crack Sidewalks page or at me, Joe McCann, at Joe McCann 3. You can hit up Phil, and if you want to talk about Marquette basketball or friends with him, he is M-O-O-O-F 23. And you can also like Scrambled Eggs on the Facebook, our Facebook page. Like us there. That's where
the Facebook. Have we gotten old?
I said, I know I stuttered there, so that's why I transitioned to the Facebook page that we have. I'm just trying to get out of this podcast before I say anything else dumb.
Okay, proceed.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Seashells and balloons.